From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of March 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and hear all about the agricultural weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's with Everstream Analytics. It's just a brand new name for Risk Pulse. We'll hear about that as we make our way through this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Oh, and we'll revisit some comments that Jordan Fife from BioUrgent made on a Commodity Week program very early in the month of January as it's related to renewable diesel. Not bio or soy diesel, but renewable diesel. I think you'll want to hear that right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today at $5.47, finished a penny and a half higher. July at $5.36, up two. In December, down a quarter at $4.81.5. The May soybeans at $14.33.75, three and three quarters higher. In November at $12.54 and a quarter, up 7 cents. Bean meal $1.90 higher. The bean oil futures 66 cents higher for the day. Wheat futures soft red July down 2.75. That's the harvest month at $2.40.5, and the hard red July at $6.27.5, 4 1/4. Quarter cents lower. Live cattle futures finished the nearby at 119.35, 32 and a half cents higher. Feeders at 135.35, up 75 cents, and lean hogs at 12 and a half higher at $87.30 per 100 pounds. Crude oil futures down a buck at $65.09 a barrel on the trade at the moment. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.91, that's 3 3/10 lower. Gasoline on the RBOB down a penny and 7 cents at $2.04 and 7 cents, and natural gas for the day at $2.66 is down 4 1/10 cents. The U.S. dollar is up 0.356 at 92.345. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Hey, good afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Ty. Glad to be here. Thank you.
It was an interesting start to the trading week because futures were sharply higher in the overnight trade, but did not hold on to those gains during the day. What happened?
Yeah, we're seeing some volatility pick up. The market did open higher. Then as the night session went on, it moved sharply higher. There was some talk out of the southern hemisphere that the quality of the beans aren't up to standards. The yields are not up to expectations, and that kind of put a little fuel on the fire there and pushed the market higher. It was computer-generated trade through the evening session. Seems like Sunday nights, they're playing keep away. They kind of get you excited there on the open, and they keep moving higher or else lower. Then all of a sudden, people find themselves having to put market orders in to get some fills if they want ownership or want to sell on the downside. So it's keep away Sunday night. And the last couple Sundays, it seems like the highs have been made Sunday evening, and the market kind of retreats from there on back. Part of that, too, was higher world vegetable oil markets thrown in there, and just a lack of selling interest. The producer's fairly well sold up. It's not too interested in selling a lot more. A little catch-up selling on the cash side with the crop insurance spring price pretty well locked in as they make final decisions on these policies. Oftentimes, they'll go ahead and sell some insured bushels to get those hedged or marketed, but that's about the only selling interest we saw. But the market ran into some profit-taking as we moved into the meat of the days. The weather maps kind of flip-flop back and forth in the southern hemisphere there. Of course, export inspections came in just about in the middle of the range, so we are shipping out what we sold. We'll continue to monitor that to see if there's any large-scale cancellations as we move forward in through here. But the Asian market and some of these other countries need grain and want to stockpile some grain inventory, so that needs still there, and it's not going to disappear here anytime soon until we probably get more into our growing season, see what type of crop we have here in the northern hemisphere. Crop size, tomorrow we'll have that monthly supply-demand report out. That's the old crop, of course. Ideas are that the ending stocks on corn could be about 1.471 billion bushels. That's about 30 million bushels less than last month. And the bean ending stocks, 117 million bushels. And that's about 3 million bushels less, so slightly lower. I don't know if there could be a whole lot of surprises there. I think the focus is more down the road, you know, as far as these stocks go. World numbers, we'll see if they address the world numbers, particularly Brazil. Man, there's some estimates that Brazilian crop was down to 125 million metric tons, but the trade continues to be dialed in 133 million metric tons. So we'll see if there's any light coming on what size that Brazilian crop. Probably more important is the Argentine crop, as it's probably suffered a little bit more of a adverse weather pattern here as we move into this March time window. So a lot of zigging and zagging. The main thing today, though, is the higher close. If we were to close lower today, technically that would have been a hook reversal to the downside or a daily reversal to the downside. And that would signal some fairly decent resistance up near last night's highs there, Todd.
Is there interest in what's been happening in the livestock sector as it relates to the grains as well? And maybe you can talk some about the hogs, because since December, they've just been on a slow, steady run higher. And actually, you turn around and they've gained, what, $20 or something like, well, they've gained a lot in the last couple of months.
Yeah, for those guys, it's not on a contract for the most part. There's some interesting some hedging activity here at these higher levels, just due to the fact that you know, there's some profitability back into the pork complex, even the meat sector in general. When you look at the raw numbers or the weekly slaughter estimates, we're running about 3.5% less cattle through the chain and about 4% less hog numbers. So we've come off those burdensome supplies. We're seeing less numbers than a year ago. Then, two, just like we've been watching these exports on the grain side of the equation, this export news on the pork side just continues to be robust. You know, there's been cases where we've seen 35,000, 40,000 tons of pork move out. You know, it's Asia, Mexico, and so this overall demand has remained strong. Then, plus, two, we're seeing these vaccines take hold. We're opening up these bars and restaurants. And for those who like to go out and eat, that's a big supply chain right there, supplying these restaurants. In fact, there are some cases here locally in surrounding communities. You know, they ran out of some food. They had they didn't quite have enough inventory. They didn't quite plan ahead far enough to have some supplies on hand. So this is will help increase the consumption along the cookout season, which will be fastly approaching us.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it, Kurt.
Very good. Take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities. Joined us from Normal, Illinois. It's International Women's Day. We here at Will Ag hope you've listened to these inspiring commodity analysts on our air: Ellen Dearden, Elaine Cubb, Sue Martin, Jackie Vakes, Angie Setzer, Naomi Bloom, and Amy Sage. Will Ag thanks them all for volunteering their time and talent to Illinois Public Media and University of Illinois Extension. In today's agricultural news, Reuters has reported that the United States Department of Agriculture may soon update its supply and demand table for soybean to include a new use category, renewable fuels, as it's related to soy diesel, or more likely, renewable diesel fuel that is made from all kinds of vegetable oils. This is something we've talked about on Illinois Public Media for about 4 or 5 months now. It started with Jerry Golke last year and was related to some information he'd heard from the oil industry in North Dakota that was looking to service renewable diesel fuel needs in the California market. And we followed up in January on the seventh day, in fact, on Commodity Week with Jordan Fife, who's an ethanol trader for a firm called BioUrgia out of Texas. One of the questions I asked Jordan was about California and the push for renewable or biodiesel. Renewable diesel is actually the name of it, and what he knew. Here's part of that conversation.
Sure. So it's not only California. There's a giant push for renewable diesel, period. And you can look at Valero as kind of your beacon there. Valero has, so renewable diesel is much different than biodiesel, just to start off there for everyone. I'm sure you guys know. You need a hydrotreater. So you basically need a refinery or a treatment center to do that. And hydrotreaters are extremely expensive, much more expensive than, say, you know, an ethanol plant. Good rule of thumb for an ethanol plant is about $1 a gallon to build, somewhere around there, maybe a little bit north. Hydrotreaters can cost, you know, $800 million. So as some of these people are revamping their refineries, they're looking at them and saying, hey, if I've got this hydrotreater and I can use it to make renewable diesel, one, it's got extremely low carbon footprint, so LCFS comes into play. Two, it's a nice push within the oil industry, and you've seen a lot of these oil companies saying, hey, we're going to lower our carbon footprint. So it's a great offset for them to do so. But for feedstocks, to run these and to make renewable diesel, soybean oil is definitely one of them. Canola oil is definitely one of them. Corn oil can be used for it. And then you can use fats, tallows and everything like that, use cooking oil, et cetera. All of that is friendly to the farmer. Obviously, bean oil at a crushing plant or at an ethanol plant is a byproduct, along with soybean oil from a crushing plant, canola oil from canola crushing plants. But the size of these investments that they're making are going to be quite large. So it will be a draw on those industries, meaning that they need more of it. There'll be more needed to be produced, and they can do it at a way that will be pretty economically benefit to them. The large Exxon, for example, has announced they're doing it. Valero's announced they're doing it. T66 has announced they're doing it. Valero's already doing it, I should say. So these things are happening right now and will become a major player in that space, and I think for some time to come. And to the California point, obviously California's got the LCFS, the low carbon fuel standard, and they will be a huge draw on that. This stuff, I could get into a huge discussion about this and bore everyone to death, but the lower the carbon footprint, the better. And renewable diesel is extremely low carbon. So it's lowering the carbon emissions and everything like that. And in doing so, there'll be like a sucking sound of bean oil and of canola oil and fats and corn oil. It'll become a major buyer. It'll become a net short and a major buyer of those things and fats and everything else in between. And it'll probably be for some time to come. These projects, a lot of them are just getting going. It takes some time, but once they're up and running and viable, they're going to be a force in the industry for some time to come.
Where are they located? Do you know?
Oh, they're all over the place. There's some in Nevada. There's some in California, obviously, from San Francisco all the way down to LA. I can't remember where Exxon is putting theirs right now, but they just announced it. BP's interested. Like I said, I think P66 announced they were doing it as well. I could get you a map, but off the top of my head, I don't know the exact location.
So from our perspective, I'm just thinking that how far does it have to be railed and do soybeans and bean oil work for it? And I suspect it'll need to be railed, but bean oil will work.
Yes. Bean oil will definitely work. That fits it as a feedstock, as well as, like you said, canola and corn oil. And it will need to be railed, so it'll probably be on the BN and the UP.
How much usage?
It's a lot. And that's the hard part to calculate. It's actually something that we are trying to model right now. But we just don't know the size of these things. You know, we don't know. You could say any one of these facilities could take 10,000 barrels a day easily. That's 42,000 gallons. And then that could ramp up a lot. I mean, and you could have it. It is a friend to the farmer. It is probably a foe to biodiesel, because they're going to be competing over the same feedstocks. So it could eventually, you know, kind of just replace biodiesel in a certain way. And it also has RINs and everything like that. And those RINs are currently, under the current economics, are better than a biodiesel RIN. because it's a lower carbon footprint than a biodiesel.
That was Jordan Fife of BioUrja in Texas discussing renewable diesel, recorded on the 7th day of January in our Commodity Week program. Reuters is reporting today that in the monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand estimates, even this spring, USDA may add a new use category for renewable diesel, actually just soybean oil, broken out in the supply and demand table for soybean. Farmers have until Monday of next week to make crop insurance decisions. It's been several years since the spring crop insurance price has been this high. The average price for December corn futures last month was $4.58 a bushel, and it was $11.87 for November soybeans. Now, those are the starting prices for crop insurance, and they're good ones, says University of Minnesota's Ed Usset.
Well, first of all, it's wonderful. The crop insurance levels are very high. That's a great thing to start with. And you got to have crop insurance. You got to have that. And then I'm telling producers, I'm just noting this tendency for the market to go lower. If we can assume a normal year, if we can assume some sort of a non-drought year, just a normal year in the Corn Belt, we're going to go lower by harvest.
Work from the University of Illinois agrees with that assessment, and it has Illinois' Gary Schnitke advising farmers to take the highest RP policies they're comfortable with and to use ECO, too, if they're willing to pay the premium. So, for highly productive soils, 80 or 85% RP plus ECO to 90%, because he says it is worth it.
First off, I would say it's probably worth it because you're going to be protecting a higher revenue level. So if at all possible, think about that. But many farmers sort of have a budget in mind. If you want to keep in that $12 to $18 area, you're going to have to drop down from 85% to 80% or roughly 5%. And that's probably the case. If you did 80% last year, you're going to have to drop down to 75 to keep your premium about the same. Again, the good thing about dropping from 85 to 80 is you're probably still going to have a higher guarantee this year than last year at 80% versus 85% last year because of the higher prices.
Farmers on less productive soil, say those in parts of southern Illinois or in the far western Corn Belt, may have tougher decisions to make as it's related to ECO, even if they're inclined to stay the course on the RP policies. At least that's how Dan O'Brien from Kansas State sees it.
Is it an option? Yes. Is it costly? Yeah. So we need to balance the marginal cost, marginal benefit of going to those higher coverage levels, I guess, is maybe the most judicious thing I can say.
For those wanting to see how different coverage levels and options might work on their farms, the University of Illinois has a downloadable crop insurance decision tool. It's an Excel spreadsheet. Just type crop insurance decision tool into Google. It should be the first thing to pop up from the FarmDoc website. On this Monday, let's check in with Mark Russo. He's with Risk Pulse. Oh, wait a second. Risk Pulse has now merged, Mark Russo. You're with Everstream Analytics, a brand new name that's been, what, maybe a year in coming or so for your company?
Yes, Todd. We've officially been rebranded at Everstream Analytics as of last week. That's the combination of Risk Pulse and Resilience 360, which merged over a year ago.
I'm interested a lot because the webpage is not a .com, it's everstream.ai, which I think is a whole lot of fun. Anyway, we'll talk more about that maybe at some point in the future. I do want to talk about the weather forecast. Things have been really tricky in South America. Too much rain in the northern part of that continent, too little in the south. Why don't you start with Argentina for me?
Well, Todd, with Argentina, yeah, they will continue to have issues with a lack of significant rainfall coming up over the next couple of weeks there. This week features mostly dry conditions. Next week, we'll at least see some improvement in rainfall, but we're still not seeing a setup that would allow for more widespread rain and, you know, more significant dryness relief. And so that continues to be an issue for summer crop development, especially for soybeans, which are still going through the yield-sensitive pod setting stage. Also of note, some hotter temperatures, as Argentina has already seen in recent days, and this week features continued above normal temperatures, with then a return of cooler temperatures or more seasonal levels next week.
And when you go further to the north, things begin to get wetter. You start in the southern part of Brazil for me first? Let me know what's happening there, and then make your way into Mato Grosso, where the problems really are.
Yeah, for southern Brazil, Rio Grande do Sul continues to be the focus of attention, as that's still where soybeans are going through their critical stages of development. They got good rains back about a week ago, but they've trended drier ever since. And for much of the next 2 weeks in Rio Grande do Sul, we see limited rain activity there. So that continues to be an area to watch. And then further up north, where the rain activity has been more frequent and heavier, that's where harvesting is taking place. And for the next 2 weeks, we see a generally near normal rainfall pattern, which can still in the rainy season, beginning to come off the peak of the season. But over the next couple of weeks, the rainy pattern will continue to cause additional disruptions in overall harvest progress.
Now transition to North America for me, please. We've had really nice weather. Will it stay that way?
Well, Todd, we don't think so. Coming up here, well, at least the next few days, still unseasonably warm and generally dry. That does look to change over the weekend and next week as cooler temperatures work their way into the Corn Belt, and also rain activity will begin to increase. So a bit of a variable temperature and precipitation pattern, which actually is pretty typical for the month of March.
Any reason to worry about really bad weather in parts of the United States at all?
Nothing too concerning right now. However, we do need to keep an eye on the Delta and the southern Midwest, again, with these rains coming up. And overall, that does, with that being the first area with summer crop planting, they're certainly going to need some drier weather late this month or into the early portion of April for it not to become an item of concern. So something to watch, but too early for it to be a problem yet.
You know, I didn't come up with the right term. I should have said severe weather. Thanks for the bad weather potential issues through the Delta. But severe weather, it seems to me that I've been hearing that it might be a greater potential problem this spring. Why is that the case?
Well, Todd, there is increased risk of more severe weather outbreaks this spring, primarily due to the fact that a La Nina event is ongoing across the Pacific Ocean, and also the dryness across areas of the Southwest, and still a warmer Gulf of Mexico. You have those ingredients that in years past have provided a setup for more active severe weather season. So that's also something to keep an eye on, and as we go through the next several months.
Hey, thanks so much, Mark.
You're welcome, Dad.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.